And welcome, my fellow colleagues, to another edition of Joe's Nurse Podcast. This is attorney and nurse practitioner Joe Flotis reminding you to join us as frequently as I podcast. And I want to thank you all. The first one I did, boy, did I bomb that one. I had the mic, and I'm used to having a professional studio mic, everything. I've had a television program for about 15 years and started doing these podcasts. So please forgive me if there's a lot of scratchiness and things like that. I did a what if you are reported to the board? So let me recap that one in just 5 minutes or less. The points that I made on that is, what if you are reported to the board? As a speaker for the National Council of State Board of Nurses, I have reviewed each and every state. I'm not trying to give legal advice, nor should you rely on what I'm saying specifically for your state. I am part of organizations that I associate with counsel in each and every state, and we can put you in the right hands. And we also have people on standby whenever we consult somebody. They're on the line or with us contemporaneously to get you the help that you need. And I also am a federal practitioner. But throughout the more than a decade of speaking in the National Council of State Board of Nurses, I've learned a lot. And the burden of proof is different in different states. Some are more likely than not, which is tipping the scales of justice. Others are clear and convincing evidence, which is a very high burden. And some just a little bit higher than that. But I've talked to the investigators. I've talked to lawyers from the board. They're good people. They're just doing their job. And remember, if you can remember anything out of this podcast, you remember this one thing and say it with me. The board in your state is not there to protect your license. They're there to protect the general welfare of the public. And that is true in every state. You're going to hear that in every state. They're there to protect the patient, not you. So remember that. And also, having a license is a privilege. It is doesn't have the constitutional rights that you would have as a U.S. citizen, say, to bear arms and to do things like that. It's more of a privilege to have the license, just similar to a driver's license. If you have too many violations, speeding tickets, or make great errors, you can lose that license. Unfortunately, in our profession, there are degrees. There's ranges of punishment and severity of punishment, up from warnings all the way up to revocations. What I wanted to let everybody out there know is, if you are, if you are reported to the board, first thing is, always have your updated address with the board. So many people have gotten a certified letter from the board and their mother's address was what they've had for years. They moved on. They are in a compact state or working in other states. They're travelers and they don't check their mail but once a month, and you have a, you know, say you have a 20-day deadline like in Texas and you don't answer it. That can be turned over to formal charges. And what are formal charges? That means like going to trial in administrative law. I've handled federal, civil, criminal, and administrative law. And what you have in most states is a panel that will hear it, or an administrative judge that will hear your case. And you don't want things to go in a formal way without having a response. Number two, not only keeping your address updated, but also having not only your address updated, but also in mind, keep in mind this, do not, and I repeat, do not answer that allegation by yourself. 99% of the time, it is an error. If you do so, you do so at your peril. You should get an attorney in your area who is, or attorney that is very experienced in working with a board and working with administrative law to answer that for you. I'll tell you why. Because if they misspeak, that's their problem. They misspoke. You did not. If you write it in your own hand, what have you done? You've made some admissions. And the second part of that statement is, many nurses are not told you can get a lot of discoverable documents. You can and are allowed in most, if not all, of the jurisdictions that I've certainly looked at. You can get at least the main germane topics and documents that you are being, say you're being accused of diversion. You can get documents that are very important and that are germane to your case. So remember, once again, that last podcast is do not respond without a lawyer. It could cost you. And two, always keep your address up to date. Now, this other topic that we're now looking at is healthcare fraud. In many instances, and you know, for a very long time, I would beat the drum. I would tell people, you know, it's coming. You know, I tell home health owners, I would tell nurses that work for home health, I tell people in the nursing homes and hospitals that the Justice Department was coming, that you know, federal and state agencies, OIG, Office of the Inspector General, those people were saying, remember that money that we gave you, you know, for Medicare, Medicaid? Well, we want it back. And also third-party carriers are also following suit in that regard, pardon the pun. And also there are what's called RACs. And if you don't know what RACs are, those are recovery audit people. They're contractors that are paid, and they are paid by a percentage of what they collect back. So there's kind of like a built-in and inherent conflict. They're saying, well, I'm going to have to find something wrong with this institution, this practitioner, this group's model in order for me to collect money back. So that is what's going on right now. Healthcare fraud is a booming as far as the government is concerned. They are trying to collect billions back. And my comments are not just for the nurse practitioner. They are for the RN and the LVN if in Texas, or LPN in the other states. I'll tell you that if you are working in an area that you suspect is committing healthcare fraud, or is upcoding, and we'll talk about that in detail in a little bit, or is doing something else, ghost notes. They are writing notes and seeing patients that they haven't seen, or they are certifying patients that don't meet criteria, or they are quote-unquote skilling stroke patients in a nursing home and having them do PT and other things, and then when they're through with those dollars, they say, oops, they're back to being comatose again. So these are schemes, and I've just listed three or four. I can list about 1,000 if I sat here and throughout this 15-minute podcast and tell you more. But I mentioned the what if you are reported to the board, because often the reporting of the board goes hand in hand with the healthcare fraud issue. Say you are a whistleblower and you tell your employer, be it the hospital, nursing home, or a home health, or if you're a nurse practitioner and you're in a group or working for a doctor or another group, and you say, hey, it looks like, you know, this may be healthcare fraud here. You may be retaliated against, and it's hard to prove retaliation. Like many things in the law, on the books it looks great, on TV it looks great, but hard to prove to people that are with have badges and guns, hard to prove to you know, the federal government, the state government, and to 12 people on a jury or to a federal or state judge that you have done nothing wrong and that your hands are clean when you report healthcare fraud. And I'm not trying to be you know, very jaded about this. In fact, this is, in fact, the truth. I've sat in on those federal debriefing rooms with agents. I cannot talk about the cases that I've been on, but several agents from different agencies have sat in on there. And I'm talking including IRS, Homeland, other places, and also have listened in, Health and Human Services, and listened in on that. We've known people that are relators that go in and bust these people that are doing, and relator is a whistleblower, that and they go in and help the government bust those people that they believe are doing or performing some sort of healthcare fraud or committing healthcare fraud. So let's talk about that. Many years ago, the Lincoln Law was what came, you can call it quitam or quitam, as some people pronounce it, is a Latin term, and it's short for he who brings a lawsuit on behalf of himself and the king. And these whistleblower lawsuits or quitam lawsuits are ones that originated from the Lincoln Law, when during that time, during Reconstruction, they were selling cannons and, you know, weapons that were no good to the government. So the government was getting ripped off. The government had a way to claw back that money and punish those wrongdoers. Well, it stayed on the books for a long time, and then comes Medicare. And then Medicare was in some circumstances ripe for abuse. And in the last decade or two, it has really been that clawback sort of atmosphere during the Obama administration, during the Bush administration, and now during the President administration. We have the attorney generals, who are the top cop in the land, who are saying to Health and Human Services, to OIG, and other very important organizations, get back that money, especially if people have been upcoding. Say a nurse practitioner that works with a group that is billing 99213s or 214s or higher, upcoding, and they don't fit that. They don't fit the criteria. You know, if you're a coder or a biller, you know what I'm talking about, or somebody who does participate in the program. In other words, you are billing a higher code than you should have. And if you do it too much, it sends out the smoke signal. So those are the people, say, a whistleblower that wants to bring this to the public. There are certain rules. If you notify your employer and you are retaliated against, there are penalties up to treble damages of your salary plus, and then it's part of the federal law. Again, this does not constitute legal advice for any specific case or for you to rely on. Just speaking in general terms, in my experience as 17 years as an attorney, 20 as an MP, and 30 as an RN, that there are laws that protect you. But again, not to be jaded, just to be realistic, very hard to prove. So you have to lawyer up. You've got to get a lawyer who knows what they're doing. And if you want to really stop healthcare fraud and do the right thing, you get a lawyer and you can file a lawsuit under seal. What does that mean? That means that it is not disclosed to the public until the government is ready. The government takes a look at it. Can take up to 6 months, a year, maybe more, to look at it and investigate it. They can decide whether it's a civil sort of violation, and then the whistleblower may be able to get up to 20% recovery rate for blowing the whistle. And often, if their hands are clean, they didn't do anything wrong, there may be some other concessions that can happen. But being a whistleblower and stopping healthcare fraud helps us all, because it's not just hurting the taxpayer, it most of all is hurting the patient and their families. We've heard the stories of the elderly seeing their Medicare statements come in and they're ordered a prosthetic, allegedly, and they have both legs and arms. Medicines that they didn't order. People going knocking on doors where supposedly there is a home health and it's just a P.O. box and just an empty door, and somebody's fled the country with millions of dollars. So, of course, there is a reason why if you suspect healthcare fraud, you've got to report it. But I strongly advise that you get an attorney that's a federal attorney who knows what they're talking about in your area that handles healthcare fraud. Whistleblowers also have to protect their license, and it can backfire. So, but if you're in a situation like that, I strongly recommend that you get an attorney, tell them what's going on, and see what you can do to extricate yourself from that situation. And I have handled several cases like that over the years, and very good nurses that have become nurse practitioners. That sort of thing is ongoing, where their eyes have opened. They see the 360 sort of how an office is run. They're getting business skills. They're learning about the whole enchilada. They're learning about how everything runs. And, nurse practitioners are taking on more responsibility. In half the states, they're independent. And so we have to remember that those people in a position of authority, which nurse practitioners are, they have to report. They have a non-delegable duty to report it. And RNs and LPNs/LVNs have to, too. If you suspect healthcare fraud, you are on the front lines. And we underline it's very important for you to report healthcare fraud, get an attorney, and you may file it under seal. Now, some of these cases can turn criminal if they can prove that these people did it on purpose in order to achieve an end. If they were doing it and just trying to get more money without purposely trying to run a criminal scam or organization or conspiracy, it's a lot different than a far cry from a civil sort of whistleblower information that gets filed. But this is Joe Flores. Our time has run out on this podcast. But remember, if you want to get a hold of me, it's Joe, J-O-E, at floreslawfirm.com, or you can reach me at 361-887-8670. That's 361-887-8670. Our time has run out, but I want to thank you all so much for tuning in, my fellow nurses. And it's always an honor and a privilege to provide information and bring nursing, medicine, and the law closer together. Thank you all, and God bless.